Hi, Shalene. I'm Justina.
And I'm Hayley.
And we just wanted to jump on here to say how much we enjoy your podcasts.
I absolutely love Build Your Tribe. Your content is amazing.
And I absolutely love The Shalene Show, although we do listen to both of them together. So we just want to jump on here to show our appreciation and our love for everything that you do.
Absolutely. So be brief, be bright, make it fun, and then be done.
And we both love you, and we mean it.
Yeah.
Hey there, welcome to this edition of Car Smart Friday. We are in the car with Brett. He's driving. What's up, Brett?
What up, people?
And Marge and Bill are here, my mom and dad.
Hello, people.
Yabba dabba doo.
Oh my gosh. All right, put your seatbelt on and maybe a helmet. We are definitely going for a joyride.
Welcome to The Shalene Show. Shalene is a New York Times bestselling author, celebrity fitness trainer, and obsessed with helping you live your dream life.
Our topic for today is how to have a successful long marriage. How long have you been married?
52 years.
52 years?
And how many of those years have been joyful?
Quite a few of them.
Quite a few?
A lot of them, yes.
What were the hardest years?
Hardest years? Mm-hmm. Probably when I was a stay-at-home mom and dad was working, that was tough, and he, at that time, wasn't making quite enough.
He wasn't making quite enough?
Yeah, right.
So what was hard about it? Was
I remember
it?
At one point, I was hoping he'd go out and kill a deer to get some meat in the house. Jeez Louise.
That's mean. I mean, that's just low. That's in first 15 when she still thought she was the boss.
So was it definitely harder when the kids were little, meaning me?
Definitely harder. Yeah, like you're at stay at home and you get snowed in for weeks at a time. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So what was hard? You keep saying like staying at home. Like, was it hard for you to stay, you to be at home?
No,
or was it financial
about,
was hard?
No, I was just worried about getting like heat to the house. We had a house that you had to have propane at, and the truck couldn't get to the house because there was so much, yeah, oil. There was it oil? The truck couldn't get up to the house because of all the snow. Mm-hmm. You know, you couldn't get out to go grocery shopping. Mm-hmm. It was just really tough when we lived down the country.
Well, yeah. It sounds like what you're describing is life was kind of tough. How, or was it difficult in terms of your marriage during that time? Because remember, this is a podcast about marriage now.
Yeah, well, we could get along. As far as marriage, we were always consistent and together on our thoughts. We always kind of think alike. Mm-hmm.
So, but let's talk about what was a tough time in your marriage, because I know there are tough times, like in terms of a season. Was it when your kids went off to school? Was it when the kids were little? Was it when financial times were tough? Was it when you first got married?
Listen, marriage is a lot of work day by day. There could be a tough time one day and an easy time the next. So, yeah, it would be hard to remember what was exactly tough. I just remember being stuck in the house and dad off on the road, you know, selling stuff, and me at home trying to make sure that the house stayed warm and enough food for the kids to eat.
Mm-hmm. What would you say, Dad?
What do you think?
Well, I think there are always ups and downs in every marriage, mm-hmm. but I think most of the time if we ran into a tough time, a hill, mm-hmm. we'd realize it and we'd figure out what the problem was and solve it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? Well, like if we were in a business together and I was like, okay, this isn't working, we need to do something else, we would work together and do something else.
Mm-hmm. I remember, the only time I remember really, well, I mean, like there's the fire that was...
Oh, God.
What?
The fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So moments I remember where I sensed that there were like... trouble or financial issues or like things were hard. Pinch. Moments that I remember were the fire.
Yeah, well, tell people what it was. We had all of our eggs in one basket, so to speak, and Dad had bought this business, and there was an arson that came in and burned it down before we got insurance on it. Mm-hmm. So we lost everything. Mm-hmm. And they probably would have locked him up as an arsonist thinking, oh, we were getting our insurance, but no, we weren't. We actually didn't have insurance, and luckily the safe didn't get burned, and we had some money in the safe that got us through it. Mm-hmm. That was, mm-hmm. yeah,
tough. Tough time.
I've talked about that experience before on my podcast. What year was that, Dad?
1981.
81. See, I thought I was younger. So how old was I in 81?
12.
I was 12.
11 or 12, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, okay.
Yeah.
So.
That's so awesome that you don't know that.
Mathematician in the front seat.
Yeah.
I don't even know how old I am right now. And we don't need to bring it up.
Yes, exactly.
That was one incident. The other is I remember the stress and strain of the house in Portland, like financially how hard that was, and probably it has a lot to do with the fire too, because that was about the same time, but also that was like, you know, I think that really put you guys upside down. Am I right?
Well, yeah, we had the fire in 81 and it really took us to 86, 87 to begin to recover. Yeah, it was a lot more than the fire. We had the fire at the same time that we were threatened by the mafia, and basically had to leave the business that we were doing in Detroit, go someplace else and recreate it.
And then the house that you had invested all that money in, that wasn't a great decision.
No, bad investment. It was what do they call that?
Money pit.
It was a money pit.
Yeah, it was a money
pit. You know, we had bought the house fairly cheaply, but it was huge, and we invested a lot of cash money into it. It wasn't like we borrowed money, but we put all of our savings into it.
Did you think that you were going to be able to resell?
At some point, we would recoup that, but when it came time to sell it in kind of a down market, we took a huge loss on it.
The next moment I kind of remember is when we moved to Grand Rapids, and I think Dad took a job selling cars at a car lot. Yes? You're looking at me like you don't remember.
Yeah.
I totally remember that.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I remember Dad, like, literally you saying to me, your dad is really bummed out, like, really, and he wouldn't come out of the bedroom or...
Well, that was before I took the job at the car dealership.
Okay, so tell me, why?
We had been fighting all of these debts and trying to recover from that loss in 81.
So we started a new business.
For four or five years. We started new businesses, and they just weren't successful enough to pull us out of that hole.
Yeah, like we have five tool stores, and it's great if you have five tool stores and they're all doing well, but if three are doing well and two are doing bad, they're not selling well or whatever, then that's really quite a drag, and you got to do something different.
And I'd worked physically really hard, I mean, long hours for, you know, a number of years.
You did
and
everything.
By the time we finally worked our way out of it, I was just broken mentally. I mean, I was just exhausted and depressed and just didn't have it in me to go forward. And so I...
So you, like, to go forward, to just, to do anything, to pick up the phone, to start a new business, to do anything?
Everything was just too difficult, and I was so depressed that I didn't think it would work.
Okay.
And I really needed to take a couple of steps, you know, baby steps forward without going backwards. And anyways,
we closed the businesses
and I got a job at the car dealership. Your mom pushed me into that.
So let's talk about marriage for a second. When you were in the depths of that despair and you are the breadwinner, you're the provider, how did that affect the dynamic between the two of you? How did mom...
I think it made it stronger.
How so?
Ever. I mean, she was so supportive. You know, she was the backbone I didn't have at the moment.
And tell me specifically what that felt or looked like or sounded like.
She just never gave up. You know, she, no matter how bad things might have been or how dark I thought things were, she, you know, assured me that they would get better. And again, when things weren't going well, when things would go badly for a while, I would always be very reluctant to quit, to give in. And she would
going.
She would talk me into doing the sensible thing.
Okay. And that didn't feel like she didn't believe in you. It felt like she was being reasonable.
Yeah.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, because I never was.
Yeah, he would always think something, it's going to work, it's going to work. If I just keep working harder at it, it's going to work. And I would be like, no, it's not working. So let's try something else.
Now, Dad's a very positive person. He's always, you know, trying the next thing. He's persistent. He stays pretty even.
Yeah, when, but at those times, he wouldn't.
Well, that's what I wanted to know. So, like, when he was depressed and unable to get himself out of it, how did that make you feel?
Oh, like I had to pick up the pieces and make him snap out of it. Absolutely.
And what did you think about, like, okay, I need to be supportive, I need to be firm, I need to be angry, I need to be what?
Oh, probably all of those things. I had to push him into doing what I thought was right for our family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally.
And so you told him, okay, no more businesses for a minute.
Yeah.
The baby step is what?
I made him get a job at a car dealership, and I thought, hey, if he goes there and realizes that he can do anything, including selling cars, and that's what happened. He went there for like a month, and he was like, they were like bowing to him. They couldn't believe how well he sold.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a shock. Yeah.
And what did that do for you, Dad?
Inflated my ego.
Yeah. And that's what you needed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I mean, at the end of that month, I was a top salesman at the dealership, and
they were begging.
It made me realize that if I focused on what it was I wanted to do, that I could accomplish it.
How much of your struggle in all those different businesses do you relate to lack of singular focus, like just focusing on one?
Oh, I don't think I could say that.
All right, then let's ask your wife.
What? Is the question?
The question is, he just said things turned around when he decided I really need to focus on one thing.
Oh.
And I asked, because I know that's true for me.
Oh, that's totally true for him, too. But, absolutely.
We made him focus.
I think I misled you. It wasn't that I needed to focus on one thing. It was that I needed to focus on the idea that I could be successful again. And the thing was, from a young age, I wanted to be in business. I always wanted to be in business for myself, but I didn't have any experience, and I didn't have anyone around me to mentor me or tell me anything about it.
I'm sorry that you weren't a student of the Marketing Impact Academy at that time.
Really? had we known.
Had you known.
Me too. Yes. Had I only known.
Yeah. Right.
But the bottom line was that, you know, I just learned it by trial and error, which meant a lot of error. Mm-hmm, and so the fact that I jumped around from thing to thing to thing and, you know, still thought, well, this will work. I had this positive attitude when, in fact, a lot of it didn't work. I mean, I'm sure I made a lot more mistakes than I did things right. But eventually you eliminate the mistakes and you figure out how to make it work.
To summarize, you have to fail so many times in order to be successful.
Exactly.
And people often want to quit and throw in the towel and be done with it that moment before their breakthrough. And that was your most successful venture.
Absolutely.
Right. I mean, I was out of the house, so I didn't get reaped any of those benefits, and I'm still mad about it. But that, I mean, I just remember going like, whoa, my parents are like wealthy now. We were poor.
It wasn't her spending habits that were keeping us poor, was it, hon?
No.
All right, let's continue this after dinner.
All right.
One of the registered dietitians, in fact, our program director, Ashley Sweeney, turned me on to mushroom coffee. And at first I'm like, ew, does it taste like mushrooms? It doesn't, not at all. It tastes like coffee. But the difference between a mushroom coffee and a coffee is the adaptogens. So I'm really excited to share with you my favorite brand, which is Four Sigmatic. Four Sigmatic makes the highest quality functional mushroom and adaptogens by incorporating them into mainstream products like coffee and tea and hot cocoa. Now, the mushrooms Four Sigmatic puts into their products they're like literally superfoods. I don't know if you guys have looked into the healing qualities of mushrooms, but it's kind of crazy. I need to look for additional ways that I can get energy without using caffeine, right? Because caffeine sometimes can have a detrimental effect on your adrenal glands. What I love about these adaptogens is that they improve the skin, they support your hormones, they improve gut health, and of course, it's all helping your immune system, your cellular function. Now, just like a coffee, you can add almond milk or coconut creamer or your MCT oil or a little dash of Himalayan pink sea salt. That's what I love to add. Maybe some stevia if you want to sweeten it up a little bit. But for me, in the evenings, what I was doing is a lot of bone broth, which is great, but I just realized I need something a little bit more for my immune system. I just felt like, okay, I need something more, something that's going to give me more immune support. And so that's when I started trying mushroom coffee, specifically the Four Sigmatic mushroom coffee. And I want to tell you guys about it because reducing the amount of coffee or other stimulating drinks that you're consuming, and consider Four Sigmatic. Okay. P.S. They've put together a special for us. You get 15% off your order. You can get that by going to four. It's F-O-U-R, like the number, but spelled out, four. Sigmatic, S-I-G-M-A-T-I-C, foursigmatic.com/Shalene, and you'll get 15% off your first order. Our program director, Ashley, she's a registered dietitian. She loves this stuff. She's the one that's really turned me on to it, and I think you're going to love it. We keep it stocked up in our office, and I'd love to hear what you think about it. And if you can't remember that link, don't worry. We've placed it for you below in our show notes. That was a good dinner. All right, so where we left off before we went and had dinner?
It's after dinner.
We have to finish. We have to finish the podcast.
How long?
OMG.
Yeah, really? Are we getting paid for this?
Holy cow. Do you need to be paid too, Dad?
We got the free meal. We're okay.
All right.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a pretty good meal.
The podcast is free, so no, you're not getting, you want to get paid, it's free.
Yeah, but we did pay for your dinner, so
yes,
basically you're indebted to me on the way home to finish this episode. Okay, so a couple of just things to tie things up with a bow, okay, because this is a marriage podcast, and it seems to me, could be wrong, but like I remember you guys fighting when I was growing up. I remember you fighting.
We fight about little things, stupid little things. Yes.
Well, no, that's called bickering.
It's a power, struggle. We do.
But it's very loving and fun. And like, do you actually get?
No. Okay, wait. Last weekend, we were driving to my reunion. Oh yeah, and I said, Bill, slow down. He's like, Marge, I know how to drive. Leave me alone. I'm like, really? So I was like, ticked off. So 2 seconds later, literally less than 2 minutes later. Oh, we're getting a ticket because he was going 87 miles an hour.
You got another ticket?
In a 70.
First ticket I've had in 10 years.
Oh, that was the quote. When was the last time I got a ticket? I don't get tickets. Yeah, 2 minutes later, he got a ticket. Yeah.
I remember growing up, him having his license suspended for too many tickets.
Got a lot of tickets.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
He's a bad driver.
I mean, overall, for my entire term driving, yes.
We can call any one of our friends, any one of them, male or female, and they will all say that Bill drives too fast.
No,
and he's
they would
a bad
say
driver.
I'm very good at driving
no,
fast.
He's a bad driver.
Okay, so back to my point. So I remember growing up, you guys being in an argument, and like a big argument, which usually ended with you in tears. Mm. And then you go to the bedroom, mom would go to the bedroom, and you'd slam the door and stay in there. And then dad would have to go in and like probably apologize because he was probably wrong.
Of course, he's always wrong. Yeah.
Always.
Yeah. Always wrong. He was wrong. And he admitted he was wrong with the ticket, too. He was not supposed to be speeding.
It's just easier to say sorry.
He was 17 miles an hour.
There's no other way to get out.
The speed limit.
The faster you can figure out to just say sorry and be done with it, the better your life will be.
Yeah.
Well, I do remember as a kid, I never worried about when you were arguing because mom didn't, but dad would always explain what was going on. Do you remember that, Dad?
Probably.
You would always say, okay, your mom and I are fine. We're just having a disagreement about, and you would be very general, but you always told us what was going on. Always. Well, I shouldn't say always. Most of the time that I thought about it. So what, did you do that intentionally?
Yeah.
Oh, of course.
Why?
Well, I think why, because I listened to my parents fight for, you know, the entire time I was in the home. And it always worried me. It bothered me. You know, and I realized later on that their fights were a lot like ours. They were very seldom about anything serious. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just the little stuff in life that irritates people. And with your mom and I, and she said it earlier, we have always had this power struggle going on. Each one of us wants to be totally in charge. And so, I mean, you know, whether it's stick fighting with the hose, you know, yelling at each other, whatever, you know, we would battle that out. But I think over the years, you know, we came to terms with the fact that, you know, that really wasn't a serious deal.
So was it a conscientious decision to tell us, you know, things are fine, we're just arguing, and you would say, like, I'm going to say I'm sorry, or, like, I always felt like you were teaching us that couples fight, and here's how you do it.
Oh, really? Okay.
And here's how you do it in such a way that isn't destructive. I mean, because most people, I don't think, know how to fight or argue or disagree in a way that's constructive. It's usually pretty destructive.
That doesn't bring in the entire dynamic of the family.
Yeah.
Or even just name-calling. Like, you never name-called. You never screamed at each other.
We discussed parameters that, you know, we wouldn't use certain words, that we wouldn't say demeaning things to each other, and that no matter what it was we were fighting about, by the end of the day, we had to resolve it. Mm-hmm. And we generally did.
Before we went to sleep, we would end the fight and make up.
No matter what.
No matter what. And a lot of people say, don't do that. Wait, go to sleep, and when you wake up, the sun will be up, and you'll feel a lot better, and you'll make up. Well, we didn't do that.
It's a pretty good Saturday.
And we
don't need to hear this.
We would stay up till like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning and iron out those differences.
Yeah, that's true. You do have to stay up late to iron those out sometimes. Yeah. All right. Do you have any questions about how I interpreted, because I can't speak for Janelle or Bill, my brother, but do you have any questions about how I interpreted anything growing up?
I think living in the dark is a lot simpler.
What do you mean? What does that mean?
Well, you have three kids.
Yeah.
And they all saw things in a different light.
Yeah.
You know, and it can be pretty heavy baggage to carry as a parent. So, I mean, I'm not saying...
Well, don't you feel like you did a good job? You have three kids who are all entrepreneurs, who are all happily married, who all have successful marriages with successful kids and their successful businesses.
We are not the norm.
Yes.
Right.
So don't you feel like you did some things right?
As a couple, we know that we're not the norm anyway.
We did a lot of things right, but then, you know, you also have to... I think realistically, you got to say you were pretty lucky too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
how much luck do you think is really involved in what you did? I know that sometimes
there are other people that have done a great job raising their kids, and all the kids don't turn out great.
I agree with that. You're right. That's true.
That much better than everybody else.
Yeah. No, we weren't. No,
but I do remember you guys always reading books, like always reading parenting books. And
well, the book that we read was Dr. Spock, and he always said over and over.
We read other books, too.
Be consistent. Be consistent. Because I had a child at 20, so I was really young.
Children raising children, so we had to read something.
We were raising each other, too. I mean, I was 18 when I got married, and you were just barely
at least 20 years to get through the basics of raising her.
Raising her. All right, so then one other question about, real quick question, because we have to end it. But what are the most annoying things, biggest mistakes you see parents making with their children?
Absolutely. Not being consistent.
I knew he was going to say that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. One parent saying, oh, that's fine. And the next one going, no, it isn't. And then just going off on the kid. And it was like, oh, boy.
They have this conflict going on between themselves, and they put the kids right in the middle of it.
It's horrible. It just makes me want to be sick to my stomach when I see it.
You're also Bill, too, because I've seen it happen with, like, the grandkids and stuff like that. So you must have been this with like your own kids. You're say it once.
Zero tolerance.
Oh, it's you say it once, and if the child keeps doing it, or the grandkid keeps doing it, you remove them from that situation or you leave. Yeah. And I watched you do it with. I've watched you do it with some of the grandkids before.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. No negotiating.
No.
That really bothers me. I see a parent tell their kid, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that. What they're saying is, do it.
Yeah. Because until I get like, really loud or whatever.
Wait till you see my dander go up. Yeah, exactly.
I see parents get really angry at their kids and really browbeat them and on a regular basis. And it doesn't accomplish anything positive. You know, it establishes a fear in the kid and, I don't know, maybe a sense that they aren't good or that they aren't adequate. And I think when you address the problem right at the beginning, mm-hmm. and you don't have to scream, you don't have to yell, but, you know, you just make a firm analysis of what's going on and say, hey, that's not going to work, and don't let it work.
And your dad and I both agree that that's not going to work. Exactly. So we're together on this.
Yeah.
And Shalene, you used to try and work both of us, and we were like,
I don't believe
she's really trying to work both of us.
And if it was something we didn't agree on, we didn't argue in front of the kids about it. We pulled ourselves aside and discussed it and said, okay, let's find this middle ground, and this is the way we're going to go.
Okay, one last question. You let me quit everything. You let me try anything, but you let me quit everything, right? Like piano or
our
art lessons or like, golf or horseback riding or motorcycles or whatever,
lessons,
name
then
it.
You can quit, yeah.
Guitar.
Yes.
You let me just go like, I want to do that, and then sign up for it or sign up for a sport or sign up for whatever lessons. And then if I wanted to quit immediately, at least my recollection, my interpretation was that I was allowed to quit.
Yeah, sure.
My interpretation of it was that we tried to instill in you to do the best of whatever you did, you know, to put yourself into it 100%, but that not for us to choose what was going to be important to you or what you had to do. Mm-hmm, you know, you make those decisions for yourself. I mean, you know, we led you in directions, but, you know, it was up to you to decide what something you really wanted to do.
We want you to make your own decisions.
And I had, and specifically for both of us, when I was young, my dad pushed me and pushed me to play baseball. Mm. Her dad pushed her and pushed her to play golf.
Yep.
And it turned both of us off to those things. Mm-hmm. You know, we had no passion for it because it was kind of taken away from us. And those things that we wanted to do ourselves, we really developed passion in and we excelled at it.
I see. So was there ever a time when you would say, should we let her quit? Or did you just, it was just like a, sure, do what do you want to do next?
I think we may have discussed you quitting something, but I don't think.
We never forced her to continue on.
I don't think our intention was to force you to do anything. Mm-hmm. Again, I'd been down that route and I just didn't like it.
And what did you think, or who did you think, or what did you think I was going to do as an adult?
Well, we thought for a long time you were going to be an attorney.
No, like before high school, like, you know, when I was a little kid, what did you think I was going to do?
Be an attorney.
Oh. Why?
From the time you were about 5 or 6 years old, I took you to court, and then you talked about it all the time.
Oh. Yeah, and you like to argue.
Yeah. I like to be right.
And debate.
Yeah.
Did you know you'd been married for 52 years? I mean, and on and on
well,
and on.
Well, if we live that long, I think, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The time flies by. I mean, you
Seems
know.
It's like such a short period of time.
It does. It just flies by. Mm-hmm. Like, jeez.
We have enjoyed each other's company forever, you know, always, you know.
And we were best friends before anything else. Let's just say.
And we just feel really lucky that, you know, we've had that kind of relationship and that kind of mutual interests and, you know, been able to do so many things together and be so competitive together. Just lucky.
You'll have two kids this year. You already have one and you'll have another one. Two kids that both marriages are 25 years.
Yeah.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy. If you guys are 52 and your two daughters are 25, and your two daughters have already been married for 25 years.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And did you have thoughts around what you, like, did you know that I was marrying the right person? Did you know Janelle was marrying the right person? Did you know Bill was marrying the right person?
Well, I think we felt good about all the marriages. We really did and still do. But even with our own marriage, you know, you don't know till you get there.
True.
You
just
don't know.
True.
I mean, you know, you see all the problems that people have and
and
you know, the things that you have no control over that are just fate, you know, that could have a major effect on a life.
Yeah, that's
illness,
true.
You know, prosperity, all kinds of things.
And did you guys ever do marriage counseling or
No.
And how much of, was there a struggle because, you know, mom's home wasn't as intact as yours, Dad, and the way her father was and the way she was raised? How much of that impacted, like, the way you parented?
How it affected our parenting?
Well, because you didn't have the same... You weren't the same kind of mother that you had. And
yeah, absolutely,
but it was
right.
what she wanted.
Yeah.
She wanted to be that other person.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And your home wasn't... I mean, like, you didn't see a healthy relationship growing up. So how did you know how to role model one?
That's a good question.
It is a good question. Personally, I could never figure out how she came from that family. I mean, from the moment I met her, uh-huh. you know, she had so much character and determination and, you know, just pride in what she did and how she acted. And, I mean, she was just a really positive influence. I mean, I know I would never have led the life I did had I not met her.
Mm. How do you feel about that?
Yeah. He always tells me that I was a big influence on how he lived his life. He wouldn't have been the same if he hadn't married me.
Do you think that is just part of your soul, your DNA, or looking at what you didn't want and knowing what you did?
I think we both knew what we wanted, and we both went after it. Don't you think?
Well, that was the thing. I mean, you know, she dated guys, I dated girls, and there was never this click, you know, of, hey, that's the way I think, you know.
Oh, that's important to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Listen, I appreciate you. I love you. Thank you so much for spending time with us. If you enjoyed this episode, write us a review. I'm giving away randomly to people who write reviews two free tickets to the Marketing Impact Academy Live in Southern California. And I would love for you to be there. So write us a review. As you can tell, we're parking.
Love you, mean it.
Love you, mean it.
Love you, mean it.
Love ya, mean it.
What's it look like?
Bye. Talk to you Monday.
Or is it organized? Bye.